Life, the Universe, and Everything Else is a program promoting secular humanism and scientific skepticism that is produced by the Winnipeg Skeptics and the Humanists, Atheists, and Agnostics of Manitoba. You can email your questions, comments, or criticisms to us at lueepodcast@winnipegskeptics.com. Show notes, references, and relevant links for all episodes can be found at lueepodcast.wordpress.com or at winnipegskeptics.com/blog.
This is Life, the Universe, and Everything Else. Today on the show, what is your greatest hope and biggest fear for the future? I'm Ashlyn Noble, and with me today I have Donna Harris, the host of our show.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Pat Morrow.
Good day.
And Lauren Bailey.
Hi there.
So Donna is our host today, and she'll be taking us through the topic.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Ashlyn. Apparently, everybody, my technical skills are a little lacking these days. So I thank you very much, Ashlyn, for that help. What introduced this topic was that our group, the group I belong to, the Humanists, Atheists, and Agnostics of Manitoba, have participated in a panel discussion in Winnipeg. Now, this is happening Wednesday, January 22nd. We're recording this the day before. So by the time this goes to air, this event will already happened. But what is interesting about this is that there are going to be three representatives from three different worldviews at this panel discussion. Pat Morrow, would you be able to give us a bit more of a description of what this event is all about?
Well, we were originally contacted, Humanists, Atheists, Agnostics of Manitoba, by a fellow with Power to Change and the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. And this is a part of a national campaign by their ministry to, I guess, spread the word of Christian goodness. But one of the things they're doing, and they're actually doing this in several cities, panel discussions and debates at universities, colleges, and to my knowledge, this is the only discussion that is outside a university at a venue such as Burton Cummings. But speaking for the Christian side of things is Dr. Andy Bannister, and he's a, I guess you would call him a professional apologist and theologian. And the Muslim worldview will be represented by Shahina Siddiqui. And of course, the humanist worldview is represented by our own librarian and co-chair of the outreach committee, Diana Goods, who is probably at home right now studying very hard. But the question is there hope for the future? And they're asking how our worldviews affect what we think is our greatest fear and our greatest hope for the future. And when we originally entered into this discussion to bring this event to fruition, we did not want a debate. We really wanted a panel discussion. I thought that people could get more out of it that way.
Okay, so it's, and that was the question that was decided upon.
Your greatest hope and your greatest fear heading into the future.
Okay, so we are entering into this. It was an interesting question, and I personally thought about it long and hard, and I came up with a number of things, but for me, just to start off with, I think it comes down to people. People are going to probably be my greatest hope for the future and my greatest fear, because at times, I think we've all seen the worst and the best and the worst of what people are capable of, especially these days where we hear and see so much so quickly. I'm wondering whether we should just go around right now. And Pat, have you taken a look at this topic yourself and started thinking about what would be your greatest hope or greatest fear?
I think probably my greatest fear is as religions, and it is at least in North American Western cultures, religions are decreasing in size, the number of adherents to any particular belief. But as they get smaller, as the dynamic of even the Christian church changes, and the big old churches of times gone by are emptying, but the rock and roll show type churches of today, the more a fundamentalist or evangelical type religion mm-hmm. seems to be taking off. It's a smaller group, but it's louder. And what they are preaching is also more dangerous. And my greatest fear for something like that is experiencing locally in Morden, when we do our outreach in that, the prevalence of young earth creationists, anti-science, people who really feel threatened by just the reality of what we've learned. And I guess that would, my fear would go is internationally as well. We have weapons today that, you know, you can wipe out entire cities from a suitcase. And if they were to fall in the hands of somebody who feels that the world is,
I kind of see where you're going though. We live in a dangerous time where some of the scientific advances we've made have enabled us to do amazing things. Yet people are still looking at this, a lot of modern technology through the lens of what the religion is telling them. And it's increasingly, I guess, as you say, it's getting stronger, I guess, more fundamentalist, more extreme in certain cases.
I pretty much agree with Pat's biggest fear. I am of the opinion that the biggest thing that we have to worry about is someone taking technology like, you know, a super bomb that fits into a suitcase and using it to incite panic and all kinds of, you know, intergovernmental incidents that will erupt into bigger and worse things than we've seen, you know, in the past 50 years or so. The increase in evangelicalism, not so much. I am really encouraged by the increasing secularism, although I understand that the evangelical movement is growing relative to other kinds of movements. I still think it's on the decline, and the increasing secularism in our society is something that gives me a lot of hope.
Well said. Well said, Ashlyn. Anything to add, Lauren, at this point?
My greatest fear is probably very similar to Pat's from a sort of different viewpoint. I'm not looking at it as the religious aspect being so much the prevalent, but the rise of religions within the what is supposed to be the secular world, like the rise of right-wing religious politicians. Actually, my greatest fear is Stephen Harper getting reelected in 2015. So it sort of ties into the same thing.
I think we share your fear, Lauren.
We did have a science minister that didn't know what or didn't believe in the theory of evolution, and then when he was quizzed on it again by another news outlet, he said he did believe in the theory of evolution, and then went on to describe it, which demonstrated that he had no idea what the theory of evolution was. Our politicians, either they are smarter not to say as much, but they're still nothing like the United States, like Senator Jim Inhofe, who I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
He's a
global warming denialist, and he's actually says that the Earth will not be destroyed because until Jesus comes back, and this is a man who's running government. And I should bring up the quote for him, but it's absolutely insane in the States.
I agree, Pat. We've heard some stories that have been coming out of there recently too, that there was also a mayor of a small town who thought that it should be run according to biblical principles in the States. So we're not just looking at people who are kind of lacking that science education. Just every ordinary people, but also people in power in governments who are making these decisions for other people, which is very disheartening.
Well, even in Texas, the fundamentalist Christian ideas mm-hmm. of their, and it's a very Republican state, And the Christian ideas that leak into the school system, like an abstinence-only education for family planning. Now, that is nothing like bombs in suitcases, but it does damage to the point where in the state of Texas, they have the highest teen pregnancy, or not, what is it, the highest teen pregnancy rate, but the second highest teen pregnancy rate, and the first highest repeat teen pregnancy rate, which is just insane. And they have no proper sex education or family planning. You cannot get an abortion in the state, if even if you need one, like a medically necessary to save the life of the woman. It's just it's amazing the stuff that they have, they don't have, and it's the influence of the churches.
Some of it is the influence of the churches, definitely. But there are an increasingly bizarre array of secular groups who are also kind of joining in, and I say secular groups, but sometimes you'll delve deeper into them and find out that they have weird, convoluted reasons for contributing to the so-called war on women. And they want to appear to be very secular. Excuse me. And at the core of their beliefs, it ends up being things like, well, but it's, you know, some source that's totally anti-science, yada, yada, yada. And so I would definitely add the increasing war on reproductive choice and health for women to the list of fears.
Okay.
Well, there's one thing that ties all this together, and that's whether it be anti-vaxxers or religions or anti-science, the homeopathic people, or I should say homeopathic supporters and that, and it's all faith-based. And one of the latest books I'm reading, A Manual for Creating Atheists, is actually he really narrows it down to like what Ashlyn said, not so much the religions, but an entire system that is based not on reason or evidence. It's a faith-based system.
This is an audio podcast. They can't see you hold up your book.
Yeah, no. I just
we enjoyed it, though, Pat. Believe me, trust me, everyone in the audience, Pat held up the book. Charming did a nice Vanna White kind of flourish with it, and it was all wonderful and lovely. So I agree. I think we kind of realize, but then I hear what we're saying on two counts here. We all have seen a lot of episodes and issues where we see that religion is becoming concerned to us, but yet from the statistics, we're seeing an increase in secularism, which is a bright spot for the future, and is certainly a heartening thing. And I'm wondering if there is a reason for that disconnect. And it's coming to my mind that I'm wondering, I'm probably going to blame this all on the media. I have a feeling that we may be just hearing about those extreme incidents that keep popping up in the news feeds, and we see on the evening news, and I still read a paper newspaper, so I keep hearing and seeing these stories. I guess we hear probably the most extreme things, we see the worst things, and maybe there's a lot more positive going on behind the scenes that doesn't get reported. I'm wondering if anybody else kind of is sensing that out there.
There's definitely a bias, especially on some networks, towards reporting things that make their side look like martyrs. There's this whole Christian martyrdom thing that's going on lately, whereas the Freedom From Religion Foundation will tell you every day they put out lawsuits that are designed to force people to adhere to the Constitution in the states. And the religious right sees this and says, oh, they're persecuting Christians. The Friendly Atheist site does a good job of every time there's a story about, oh, they won't let the Ten Commandments statue stay on the school grounds or whatever, He just points out, what would the parents say if it was a verse from the Quran? The Freedom From Religion Foundation is really only trying to make it equal for everyone, but Christians see it as persecuting them because they've never had to be fair before. So there's definitely a bias that way, and there's a lot less media reporting on the good things that secular and atheist groups are doing, as well as the growth of them, because that scares them, and they don't want to report on good things about us.
Also, I think I see a dearth of good news stories in the media. Usually we're hearing the doom and gloom, the terrible incidents, things like that. And I'm thinking as well for myself personally, I have to admit to having become a bit of a news junkie, that I'm checking out these news feeds on a daily basis, and maybe it's just also the volume that we're seeing every day. It's just probably getting overwhelming. I don't know most of the time, by the time I'm actually reading my newspaper, I've seen those headlines the day before. So the
you still
speed,
read a newspaper? That's adorable.
I know. I still read the paper thing. I still need to put under the cat's litter boxes and things. I need that newspaper. it's old school, I know, but I like it.
What does that make me? I read too.
You read too. What do you think, Pat? What do you think of what the media is saying these days?
It all depends on the media. Media is such a broad term. I guess if the television media, they have to go with what sells, and what sells is controversy. I mean, just look at when we did our outreach in Morden. Well, holy cow, when they found out there was atheists going to the Bible Belt, that was the selling story. And
true. So they accent that part of that vision, yes.
And of course, there's our provincial wannabe premier who says, you know, Merry Christmas, even to the infidel atheists. And for me, I felt the media made a big thing about it. It really didn't bother me at all. It just displayed that he was quite ignorant of what infidel means and how it's used. But
okay.
that whole controversy in the press, I mean, that got national media, but it really just didn't. It wasn't a big deal.
It wasn't a great big deal. I thought it was a poor choice of words, and I know I talked to some people, some atheist acquaintances of ours, who basically said that it was a little offensive. It was a derogatory term. It's not a term that doesn't have. It's not a neutral term. It's got some negative connotations to it.
It is derogatory, but just coming from that politician, I just couldn't take it seriously. He didn't know what he was saying. I'm almost positive it. He had no idea.
But we would have taken him to task if he had said infidel Jews, right?
True.
Or infidel Muslims. That would have been that would have been even worse. Yeah.
And even though it's ignorant, it doesn't make it okay.
Oh, I'm not saying it's okay. What I'm saying is it made me laugh because it highlighted his stupidity over something that I was offended of. Maybe it's just because I live in a pretty much insulated society. I don't have to worry about the religious coming dragging me out of the house and beating me or anything like that. But I found it more entertaining than anything else.
Yeah, and I think that is the big difference, is that you don't have to worry about it. But because that is the position that so many people, they think about it, if they think about it at all, they think of atheists and secular people as not as good as Christians, or not as good as people who have any kind of faith.
Oh, there are the religious that believe we are of the devil.
Sure, but I'm saying that comment is a reflection of that, which is why we have to be public about our rebuttal of it.
Oh,
so that
it
becomes a different issue in the public's mind.
Yes, of course, be public about it. But I'm just saying, for me, it just didn't bother me. What after he said that comment and I saw it, I just thought, what an ass. That's all that came to my mind.
And that's fine, but I think it was important that the media publicized it.
Oh yeah, but they ran with it because controversy sells.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a new thing. If you guys have ever walked down the Free Press Concourse, it's one of those skyways that connects the malls together in downtown Winnipeg. There are newspaper clippings from, 150 years ago up till the present?
That's right, yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Lauren's shaking her head. But I was just, yourself, so.
No, I was just questioning the how far back it went, but that's okay. Don't worry about me.
Okay, it goes back to at least to 1900 or so.
There we go. 100 years.
And you see that it hasn't really changed. There, people have always reported on controversy and horrible things happening because stories about nice things happening to people aren't as compelling and interesting. We don't like to gossip about them.
That's right. That's right. So on the one hand, the media does have a place in there, but I'm also wondering if it's also the volume that we're seeing. We're able to see anything happening across the planet instantaneously. So I'm sure that does have an impact. There's one story. I want to go back to this while I found this. We were talking about Christians and that particular group feeling discriminated and put against if they can't have their you know, their monuments in the public square, which is like the Ten Commandments. And I recall that just recently in the news, there was the Oklahoma State Capitol was they're wanting to have a Ten Commandments statue. Well, really, they want to be able to have every group should also be able to enjoy that space. So the Satanic Temple in New York was petitioning to have a statue of the goat-headed Baphomet Monument. So basically, these are the Satanists that want to have their own statue up there as well. So, and what's the problem then? If every group, that's what I think a lot of religious people don't understand is that we just don't want to see one group elevated above the other. If we're including one, then we include them all, and it really shouldn't matter. So that is why we kind of say let's keep it secular and let's just keep that out of places that are public property or public square, because you will have every group that wants to be included. There are a lot of different viewpoints out there.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of that story is one of the updates where this Satanist temple that had put up the plans for the monument, and they've raised the money and everything.
Right.
But the Oklahoma, did you say it was the, which building was it?
It was the Oklahoma State Capitol.
State Capitol, that's right. They had put a moratorium on all monuments until such time as they could figure out how to sort of navigate this morass.
Mm-hmm.
But the Satanist temple that had put up the plans for this thing had, it was a boy and a girl and a statue, and the lap could be used as a seat, and you know, and they had this whole big explanation for it. And a different Satanist temple came forward and said, "No, we think this monument is blasphemous, and we think it's horrible, and then they should definitely not be allowed to put this up." And it was just super funny because, like, even the Satanists can't agree as to what they want their monument to be. And so, of course, this is why we can't allow a Ten Commandments monument, because then you have to allow every monument, and it gets ridiculous.
Bravo.
I learned something today. I didn't know there was a different denominations of Satanists.
No, I didn't know that either. Well, it could have been, you know, it could have gone to the Flying Spaghetti Monster folks. You could have wanted a Jedi monument out there. Whatever.
This is how atheists and secular people have gotten so many monuments and things like knowledge trees and different secular poems posted in Capitol buildings, legislatures, and things. Because they don't want to say, no, you can't have a nativity scene because it's tradition, but that they get sued and the atheists get to put up what they want. So it's kind of interesting. We would prefer that no monuments go up at all, of course, but if there's going to be a nativity scene, we might as well put up something secular as well.
Well, thank you. I think we've really done a great job on discussing what would be part of our largest fears. Apparently, they do involve religion, and we're hoping to see a growth in secularism. Anybody have a greatest hope for the future? I think what I'm hoping for is that we come to our senses on science and the environment. I really do think that is somewhere where we need to make some great changes, and I think I think the momentum is starting to build. I don't know, don't quote me on that, but I think people are coming to realize that this is the only world we have, and maybe some things that we're doing to it might not be the best things.
So we talked a lot about the religious aspect of the greatest fears, but my greatest hope, as I had said earlier, is the rise of secularism. One of the coolest little stories that I heard recently really reinforced that for me. It's a community called Ara Amba, which I may in fact be butchering. It is a small town in northern Ethiopia. The average income is more than twice as high as compared to the rest of the region. Literacy rates are higher, mortality rates are lower, and there's a cafe, a tourist hostel, and two stores. They have a textile factory and a mill where they can turn their grain into flour. The major difference between this village and all of the surrounding villages is that this village has chosen not to be involved in religion. So instead of taking all of the religious feast days off, like all of the surrounding villages do, they work. Instead of dedicating their time to all of these different pursuits and hanging out in churches and taking days off to fast and for the Sabbath and the holidays, the neighboring villages are primarily Christian and Muslim. They use all of the time to improve their village. Of course, this hasn't gone without some controversy. The neighboring villagers are not super keen on this village. They've had some horrible things happen. A grenade was thrown into the center of town, things like that. So again, it plays into that dual story of greatest hope and biggest fear. The religious extremists are so mad that this community is doing well without religion that they want to sabotage it. They want to take away their happiness. But there is hope. In the past few years, most of the attacks have stopped. The people from the neighboring villages have started sending their children to the school. They come there to get their corn milled into grain, and the village is growing. It was founded about 40 years ago, which I found just kind of incredible. Mm-hmm. And the founder wanted to found a sort of utopian society where there wouldn't be all of this infighting from the different religions and where everybody could work and be egalitarian. Because all of the women in the town work as well, doing things like plowing and planting, they effectively have twice the workforce as the neighboring villages. And so I think if a little town in Ethiopia can make such big strides just by saying, you know what, we probably don't need this religion thing, I think a lot of places could learn from that. And I think we're on that track. Secularism is growing at a ridiculously great rate. And I'm hoping that we can see those kinds of results all over the world soon.
That's an inspiring story. Thanks, Ashlyn. When you were talking, that reminded me that that's not the sole place. That trend has been found in other places. There's actually a study from 2005 by Gregory S. Paul on religion and societal health. And religion doesn't always lead to a healthier society. That study demonstrated that the Western democracies score better than a lot of the religious societies. So they score higher in life expectancy, lower in rates of sexually transmitted infections, lower in unwanted pregnancy rates, lower incarceration rates, lower child mortality rates, and that's just part of it. So are we perhaps saying that the more secular the society or the less religious society, the more better and gooder?
Well,
to be frank?
It feeds on itself. Whenever a society introduces, you know, some basic human rights, education, and the empowerment of women, and eventually a reasonable social safety net, supernatural beliefs decrease. It seems to be that's the way it works.
Yeah, I don't think that we can make that big of a, is sort of, I don't think it's a straight up correlation causation thing. You don't take away religion and get
mortality rates.
But you have to
have an instillment of basic human rights and empowerment of women. Women taking control of their own reproductive, having their own reproductive choice, is a huge benefit to societies.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's I don't think it's correct to say that we have all of these things because we are a less religious society.
I think these things feed on themselves.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Pat.
Oh, okay. Okay, you said you didn't agree with me that
I'm disagreeing with Donna saying, you know, it does less religion make us gooder and better.
Okay. No, it doesn't.
I think it's more complicated than that. I think it's more of a cycle of people get more education and need to rely less on those supernatural beliefs to make them feel better. And it cycles from there.
Okay. So one of the big hopes for the future would be increases in education, basic education across the planet. Basic science education.
Especially education of women.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Basic nutrition would probably be a best one.
Especially since we are heading into a time where the global population is still rising and we're going to have to feed everybody that's around. So yeah, nutrition helps people do better, live healthier lives.
More of the good things for everyone. And religion will decrease, and then there will be more good things for everyone.
So as a mind experiment then, would a completely atheist society be anything like a utopia? Could it be? What would a totally atheist society look like? I'm just throwing this out there. I've not really thought about this in advance, but...
Good God, no. Have you seen Reddit Atheism? It's not a good place.
It's that bad, huh?
My son keeps saying, "Oh, Dad, you got to go on this," but I have no interest in going on Reddit and reading some of. He posted some stuff to my page, and it was I hate using the words thinking the wrong way, but they're definitely not using reason and empathy and trying to understand the other person's position, that's for sure.
Mm. And we can see with all of the strife in our own movement, especially with regards to the intersectionality of things like feminism and racism and all of the other isms with skepticism and atheism, that there are assholes in every movement, and just eradicating religion with a magic wand is not going to make us a perfect society by a long shot.
Okay, because we're obviously not perfect beings.
We are wired to find something else to quibble about with somebody else. We're going to start hating a group because they wear red shoes. It's just basic human nature to fight with the others.
Do you think we can ever get past that? Or is it just too strongly encoded in our genes?
It's taken this many years.
I don't think we'll ever get past it entirely. I mean, there's always going to be something. There's always going to be, you know, my football team is better than your football team, even in an ideal society. I mean, we thrive on competition.
Okay. But at least with a football team, then the us versus them is something that's a bit more not so personal. It's not basically made up of what we are and you know, a class division that says you're a different skin color than I am, so, you know, I'm better or you're better or whatever it is. So perhaps something like sports teams and things may be where that's heading. I don't know.
But that leads to the rise of hooliganism. And if you're a dyed-in-the-wool Manchester United fan and the All Blacks come up from New Zealand and beat you, then... it's the same thing.
I might be dating myself, but does anybody remember this line from a movie trailer? In the future, there will be no wars, just rollerball.
Yes, I do, and not the remake.
So we've
we definitely have a long way to go before we're anywhere close to a society where the biggest rivalries are sports teams.
What other rivalries then can we base our existence on? Or do we need that competition, we need that rivalry probably to strive to do well in our lives, right? If somebody
sure, it doesn't have to be a bad thing, but at this point I don't think our biggest problem is thinking up ways to compete that aren't going to be harmful. We need to just sort of, let's first get rid of the actual tribal wars. Then we can think about sports games that we can play all together and be happy.
Okay.
To a large part, we've achieved a lot. If you look at, and one of the things I bring up doing outreach when I get, this religious book is the moral, the best thing, the top notch. This is the way to guide your life. And if you look at the UN Charter of Rights, that was International Charter of Rights that was devised in 1948, that international charter has better morals in it than, well, any holy book I've read. I'm not going to say all holy books because there's a lot out there. But, I mean, what religion guarantees you freedom of religion, freedom of conscience? But the UN Charter does. And when I look at that in the UN Charter on the Rights of the Child, you don't see that in holy books either. And it just, when I look how far we've come, that gives me a lot of hope.
I enjoyed Pat's thoughts on greatest hope. I mean, we have achieved a lot. We've come pretty far in the past, especially a couple of hundred years or so. So I think that is reason to hope for the future, is that we've got this momentum now, and hopefully we'll keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, even in our own personal biases, racial, but one of the big things that really bothered my grandmother when I was born is my mother named me Patrick, and that's a Catholic Irish name. We're Protestant. But now, it doesn't matter. You couldn't find anybody that would care whether something like that mattered.
Well, I'm sure you could. I think that's a little optimistic.
Over a Catholic and a, I don't know. Well, maybe in dyed-in-the-wool Irish, Irish communities that are still not going secular, but I mean. In Ireland, secularism is taking off like crazy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying that it's not 100% there yet. Lauren, what's your greatest hope?
My greatest hope would be maybe that this Mars thing gets off the ground. I want to see how that goes. I want to see when we can start over with a clean slate, to see if we have the same issues and problems that we have here, or because we're sending the elite, the scientists, the whatever's out, if we're going to start over with a pure secular society. I don't believe we can have one here on Earth because there will always be non-secular components to it. So maybe we can see where it goes from there. I mean, that's not a hope for the next year because they're not even looking at getting it off the ground until what, 2025? Anybody remember? Then
no, it's a few years away though, you're right.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to see the experiment.
I'm just excited by the fact that they're actually taking applications and sending people on this, what essentially amounts to a one-way journey. Because if you're heading off to Mars, you're never coming back. If we actually land people on Mars, that would be an amazing feat for us. Especially since it probably, I'm imagining that it's taking an international effort to put all that together. So it's people working together for this common cause, which is quite amazing.
I agree.
Well, there was a study done by NASA. It was it was probably about 10 years ago. And they were studying how much it would cost bare bones mission to go to Mars. And I had figures in my mind, trillions of dollars in that, but with today's technology, we could send to Mars and return trip for about $35 billion which is really
is that
nothing.
All?
Yeah, it was. I would have to look it up. It was $35 billion. Of course, these are private numbers, so.
Right.
But it was studying how these people would do it. I don't know how they would do it, but this one fellow had an estimate that it was $35 billion, and he was working the numbers for NASA. So.
Well, the latest thing that I heard was that reality show that they wanted to do, where they get the candidates together and show all of the training and everything and the selection process. And I think one of their goals was to use the advertising money to fund the trip in part, which is bizarre, but you know, this is the society we live in, and I would love to be on that show.
That would be very interesting to take a trip to Mars. That would be incredible. I remember recently, though, there was a Canadian story that one woman from the West Coast, she has been accepted into the first round, but her husband did not. So now they both applied, but only she was accepted to go beyond that. So unfortunately, now he's going to be brave enough to say, bravo, and he's sending his wife away with, well, if she makes it through the next round and stuff, there's always the possibility that she doesn't, but good for her. So what I'm hearing then is that we're kind of in agreement that some of the scientific advances that we've made are really amazing things. And I think we do have to give a round of applause in that sense to science, because it has done a lot for us in the last century or two, right? I would imagine that we're in agreement with that.
We owe a lot to science, and I think it would be a lot better for more people in society to realize that.
Hmm. And it's always probably better too when it's tempered with a bit of human understanding, compassion, reason. That you know, we invent things and do things, and it's always good to make sure that this is the right thing to do. Do we have a final round of final comments? Ashlyn, how about you?
Yes, my final comment is, I hope Diana is less rambly and circuitous than we were.
Hear, hear. Yes, and by the time this actually goes to air, we'll know how everything went. So here's,
I'm sure she did a fabulous job.
I'm not going to offer up any prayers or anything, but I'm just going to have fingers crossed that I'm sure she's going to do wonderful.
I'm not going to do this one superstitious thing. I'm just going to do this other superstitious thing.
I know. It's totally irrational. So, you know, I don't know.
Just teasing.
I usually pray to the parking gods, and they usually listen to me. Those are the only deities that I give thanks to when I find that perfect parking spot. Pat.
Well, as one who spent 3.5 hours sitting in Diana's kitchen drinking coffee, working out her lecture with her and another member of our group, she's going to do a great job. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night.
Excellent. We may have to be doing up a little bit of a follow-up to this if our listeners care to find out how Diana did on that public panel discussion. So they may we might leave that for the future as kind of a little bit of a cliffhanger. So thank you all for listening, and thank you for participating with me this evening.
You've been listening to Life, the Universe, and Everything Else. If you'd like to suggest a topic for the show, or if you have any questions or comments, send us an email at lueepodcast@winnipegskeptics.com. If you like what we're doing and want to show your support, please leave us a review on iTunes, follow us on Twitter or Facebook @lueepodcast, or share the show with a friend. Our music is produced by the very talented Ian Leung.